And now it's time for Fabulous Film and Friends. This week on Fabulous Film and Friends, we're back to full-on chip-munching, beer-swilling, fist-bumping battle mode as we take on James Cameron and Arnold Schwarzenegger's 1994 marital strife, spies fighting evil terrorist action comedy extravaganza, True Lies. For this movie fans' money, the absolute best, most accomplished, escapist, guns and explosions movie ever produced, easily outdoing James Bond at its own game and making Bond look like a plodding duffer in the bargain. I'm your host, Gino Caputi, and I'm joined today by a man of action himself in his own right, producer, dancer, author, political and professional sports gadfly, George Young, who will regale us with one of his tales of his time on the production of True Lies and an interaction with the mighty James Cameron himself. Welcome back to the program, George.
Thank you.
And now to perform a scene from the movie at hand, the baritone-voiced, multi-talented, Fabulous Film and Friends, flat-bottom players, Burton Brown and Gordon Alex Robertson. Action, Bert!
Better as is.
Get another one, you moron!
Thank you.
And that's a cut.
That's a cut. Thank you.
Okay.
I don't know why. That always.
I remember that line every time I have a dead battery.
Yep. Certain things just stand out.
Before we start the timer on the nuclear bomb, the synopsis. Harry Tasker is a take-no-prisoners, multidisciplinary linguist and combat specialist and super spy working for a shadow U.S. national security agency known as the Omega Sector. And he lives a double life in Washington, D.C. with his wife, Helen, and daughter, Dana, who for their part believe Harry to be a dull, uncomplicated computer salesman. Harry's double life comes crashing to an end when a terrorist organization known as the Crimson Jihad, in league with a beautiful art dealer named Juno Skinner, captures both Harry and Helen after Harry gets distracted by his belief that Helen is having an affair with a possible spy named Simon. On top of that, Crimson Jihad kidnaps daughter Dana to use as a hostage as they negotiate the terms of setting off a nuke in downtown Miami. After years of lying to Helen and Dana, Harry turns this seemingly insurmountable personal national crisis into a win for both the country and his family as he battles the terrorists almost single-handedly with the help of his loyal partner, Al Gibson. When the dust settles of the battle, Harry and Helen realize their dream partners and sense of adventure were right under their very noses the entire time. All right, George, regale us. Tell us about your time on the set of True Lies.
Okay, so I was asked to fill in on locations by a friend of mine who was doing a lot of the location management for some of the exterior DC scenes. He got sick one weekend. I don't know if it was an actual illness or if he just had like what we used to call the cocktail flu, or he was just tired of working with James. The last two. So he said,
"Let me break in for a second. Were you in DC? Were you living in DC at this point?"
No, I was in. I just happened to be in New York for a couple of weeks working on a job, and my friend John called me and asked me if I would come down to DC because I had the weekend free. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work 13 days in a row, two five-day shoots, and then go down to D.C. to work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The big shoot day was Saturday. Actually, I'm sorry. The big shoot days were Saturday and Sunday because it was a little bit easier to clear the D.C. streets, as you can probably imagine. And I cannot remember exactly. It might have been Constitution Boulevard where the charter was to remove, and Gino, you've done this 1,000 times, remove all of the parked cars so that we could park our own cars in there. In other words, we could have control over it. Now, what happened in the film, and you guys have all watched it, is that Tom Arnold and Arnold Schwarzenegger are driving back from the airport, and the only thing you ever see from the sequence that we shot was the overhead of their car driving down, again, I think it was Constitution Avenue. They did a whole back and forth inside the car between the two of them, but essentially that got cut. They had some of the dialogue, but it was mostly when they were parked in front of Arnold's house. So I got there on Friday. I was debriefed. They said all the cars should be out of there. And of course, like every shoot I was ever on, I showed up at 6 a.m. I believe it was Saturday morning. And there was one, like, Yugo parked. It wasn't a Yugo, but it was a little car parked on the street. So I didn't want to tow. I never liked towing anybody, but I thought, okay, it's James Cameron. I don't think he's going to like laser focus on this car. So I did call services and had them send the tow truck out. And of course, before the tow truck gets there, James Cameron gets there, who is just an obsessive. He's the guy. If you're going to do a movie like this, he's the guy to direct it, because I don't think he sleeps for about 8 weeks. And he just fixates on every detail. And as soon as he got there, and I'm not going to use any of the expletives, but you can fill in the blanks. He asked what that car was doing parked on the street, because the entire length, let me try and remember, I want to say it was the western side of Constitution Avenue, was completely clear, except for this one. Again, it wasn't a Yugo. It was like a Toyota Corolla or so. It was a little car. So, of course, he just goes, as only James Cameron can, goes a little nutty and demands to know why that, you fill in the blanks, car is still there. And I immediately volunteered, because I thought, well, what have I got to lose? I'm going to be gone by Sunday night anyway. What's he going to do, fire me? Okay, yeah. Fine. So, and he doesn't know I'm filling in. He wouldn't know John if John showed up on set and mugged him. So I thought, I have nothing to lose. I'm going to volunteer. I'll take the hit. He can fix the blame on me. I'll fix the problem, which, you know, the tow truck was 5 minutes away. So I said, I'm sorry, Mr. Cam. I'm the location manager in charge of all this, and I have called the tow truck already. And he made the usual, what should I say, temporal paradox statements about, I should have called the tow truck, you know, at like 12:01 midnight and had it out there waiting to tow the one car that would be left on Constitution Avenue when James Cameron showed up. So the tow truck showed up a couple minutes later. I think James had worn himself out by that time, fixating on the car, and immediately turned his attention to, you know, harangue somebody else. So my brief encounter with James Cameron was everything I thought it would be and more.
Except he didn't fire you.
Well,
the
no.
Punchline was, and there I went. Packed my bags and went back to New York.
After 5 minutes on set.
Yeah, right.
You're fired.
The highlight of my, oddly enough, I had worked with Arnold on Junior.
Oh.
If memory serves, hang on, let me do the math.
Yeah.
What, a year before that? 2 years before that?
Yeah. It's 94. Yeah, I mean. No, wait. Junior was what?
93?
No. Yeah, maybe.
I'm trying to remember the sequence. I ended up on two Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Yeah.
Junior was awful. And True Lies, which of course we'll get into in a few minutes, was a movie that just deteriorated for me after about the first hour.
I don't know what Bert thinks, but you, me and Alex, we're True Lies fans all the way.
I get it. I just couldn't get past the cardboard cutout terrorists. So that's. I think I emailed that to you. I did enjoy the first hour. Loved the opening. I mean, that is one of the best openings ever.
Yeah.
Like the fact that Arnold cannot dance a step.
Well, that was the big question. How's the dance? That's the burning question. How's the tango dancing in True Lies?
Well, if you notice, they never show Arnold from the waist down, because he's not doing anything even remotely associated with the tango. And if you watch the ending of it, when he's dancing with Jamie Lee Curtis, you will see how bad of a dancer Arnold is at the very end. So
I'm just holding my sides because of Bill Paxton's gag, so I don't even notice the dance. Yeah,
well, the internet said Arnold worked on that dance for months.
Six months or something. Yeah. He said it was the hardest thing in the. He wanted to dance as well as Al Pacino from.
Yeah, that was what I read. Yeah.
So in your dreams.
Oh, from Scent of a Woman.
Yeah.
Now, well,
how,
the same
real
song.
Quick.
They use
the same song.
How does Scent of a Woman rate in your tank? Did Bert and Alex George can tango. He does a tango competitively, correct?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, now we do. So yeah.
Yeah. So how was Al Pacino's?
Well, actually, Al, and if I'm thinking of that scene, didn't they shot some of him head to toe? Which, if you know anything about dance and movies, if you're going to show people head to toe, you are willing to show how well or how poorly people dance. If I had to put Arnold and Al in a tango contest, yeah, Pacino did a much better job than Arnold. He's a bodybuilder.
Yeah. The burning question. I'll start with you, George. Die Hard or True Lies?
Die Hard.
Bert?
Well, that's a good question.
All right.
I'll say Die Hard. I've seen that more.
Okay, so it's according to my screen, it's Alex and me on top. So in the Brady Bunch quadrant, so it's True Lies on top, Die Hard on the bottom. I'm a True Lies all the way. Alex?
True Lies.
Yeah.
All the way. Yeah.
So I think, Alex, go ahead. What's your opinion of True Lies?
What's my opinion? Well, I think it's one of the best pot-boiling, popcorn-munching guys and dolls and guns with a little bit of, a horse and motorcycle chase, movies of all time. And I think it still holds up. It's one of those movies that you can forget about for a while, but going back and watching it, and I think watching it with a more critical eye this time, really appreciating the deafness of James Cameron. I going back to what George said about, if you're going to have a guy do this kind of movie, he's the kind of guy. So I can just imagine his meticulous nature that drives everybody else crazy, but it really pays off in this movie.
Right.
Yeah. Bert, what do you think? What do you think of the film as a whole?
Well, I thought it was, well, when it first came out, I haven't seen it recently, but when it first came out and however many times I saw it after, I liked it. It was, it got some criticism because of the, some Middle Eastern country didn't like it, when it came out or something, because it was stereotyping Middle Easterners in some way. But, what did I care back then? It was, I'm all America, yay America, hate terrorists type of guy, And so I'm like, oh, hey, the terrorists lose. That's good, And it was funny. It had some good lines in it. I'd probably say, I meant to say True Lies over Die Hard.
Oh.
I was trying to think.
All right, George, you're on your own.
I've seen Die Hard more.
Wow.
But I haven't. I couldn't even find a copy of True Lies this weekend for no.
Yeah, reason. That. Let me jump in there. They have never released it on Blu-ray, and so 9/11 hit. And here's a story on my little. Let me back up even further. On September 10th, 2001, my friend and I were watching True Lies in our living room, in my living room where I was living. And the next day, September 11th happened, and my friend called and they said, I can't believe True Lies came true. And I hadn't really watched the film since. I will say that, as James Cameron said, it's a stupid thing to say, I think, because he said, well, terrorism isn't funny anymore, as if there was this era where terrorism was side-splitting. But having some distance, again, I haven't seen it. Maybe I watched, I bought the Blu-ray. Okay, so he wouldn't release it on Blu-ray. They were kind of embarrassed about it because of the mocking tone of the terrorists. They're clownish buffoons, but, how many mafiosi, how many German, good Lord, the Germans, how they suffer for the Nazis, how many movies have they had to suffer through where Germans are dolts? And, Catholics, how many Catholics have to suffer through movies where just Catholics are the dumbest or Protestants, any of them? It's a cartoonish caricature of Middle Eastern terrorists. Fair enough, but they're really not the focus. The focus really is on this idea that your your dream partner, or you're the one that the sense of adventure is right there underneath your very nose, which I think is makes the film deeper than a James Bond film, and in some ways deeper than Die Hard, because they don't stop the movie to go, okay, here's where our hero apologizes for what a schmuck he is. It's ingrained in the plot. It's I think beautifully crafted to where all the issues are part of the story. Whereas she wants adventure and he gives it to her, and then they really get into it, and it gets just funnier and funnier because she thinks she's saving him. He's trying to save her, you know. And it's just a kind of expertly woven little escapist film with kind of a decent theme. It's not just melodrama.
Okay,
that's my take on it.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, I understand. I was reading up on the background when they were talking about the terrorists and that James Cameron did come under fire by certain groups. You know, why do you portray us in that way? And that I think at some point he was going to bring in the IRA. And I think it was even going to be the IRA, or there's going to be something of Irish terrorists. But Blown Away was released right before that, the Tommy Lee Jones, Jeff Bridges movie about the IRA. And he said, it's been done. It's been done. So, you know, flip a coin. It's going to be one or the other. You know, someone's going to get mad. Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, I don't think he was trying to insult anybody in particular. It's just
you listen to what they're talking about. It's very generic.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, they're offended for what, you know, that's my point. Like how many other bad guy groups like the mafia? Their motivations are very sketchy. And, you know, I had to laugh this time where they say, oh, and we're going to blow up this bomb on this deserted island in the Keys. Just a show of force.
Just a show. The Crimson Jihad. Yes.
That seems a little convenient, doesn't it?
Now, to Art Malik's credit, he does bring a certain menace to his role.
You know,
he's not just a buffoon. I mean, he's got some funny moments, the previous line, you know, at the beginning of the show. But he does. He does bring something, you know, if I can defend something of this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he seems dangerous. He seems suitably dangerous. He's got those killer eyes.
Yeah.
You know?
The eyes. Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, he's not the thrust. There's not, I mean, like, how does Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom get a pass and this does? I mean, it didn't get a pass at the time, and the Indian groups hated Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, but the Raiders films are still well regarded. Anyway, we're talking about True Lies.
Yes.
True Lies, I just think that's where I first noticed, beyond Terminator 2, beyond The Abyss, all these movies, this to me was James Cameron's movie where he really showed his finesse with action. It's all just better than it ever had been, in a sense. And he just outdid James Bond to where it didn't bore me the way a lot of action movies do. I just think once that sequence in the Florida Keys starts up, it just becomes so good. it's just great filmmaking, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the few clips I managed to find online, and I'd forgotten how well made that 7 Mile Bridge pursuit was.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what, it's 27 years ago, 28.
Yeah.
I mean, that's remarkable to me. I looked at it and I thought, okay, you could do that. I wouldn't say handily today, but certainly much more easily than back then. I mean, how many things in there are practical?
Yeah. Well, the bridge destruction was a model, and that still hasn't been topped in my mind.
No.
You can't tell.
Yeah. Even back then, I thought they blew up a bridge. Did they blow up a bridge?
Yeah,
they do that?
Yeah.
I agree.
And it's so well done. I mean, for some reason, I buy the whole thing. I buy that he's never told her he's a spy. And here's another thing, before you answer anybody.
Okay.
This movie has been ripped... Again, Blade. The great movies are always ripped off a lot.
Well,
and
sure.
this movie has been ripped off a few times. Mission Impossible, which one? Three? Mission Impossible 3 is a blatant ripoff.
Uh-huh.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, ripoff. There's something else. I can't think of it. Where I'm like, that's just another True Lies clone. And this movie, I'd say, has been, this is like a Hollywood staple that they keep, because Cameron has been sort of embarrassed about it for some time, people are just forgetting that, no, this story has been done, and it was done really well. So that's all. So do you buy it?
But it's a trope, right? I mean, it's like the secret life of one of the partners.
Yeah.
Okay. So to your point, yeah, you're right. It's been done. I wouldn't say it's been done to death because it's rare for it to be done well. Now, do I buy it? I was an English lit major, and I was, you know, given the the strict instructions to suspend disbelief.
Right.
So okay, so you suspend disbelief, and then you look at the craft of what again James did, you know, for the movie. It's like Harry Rehnquist. Could he keep that a secret for all that time? Sure. Why not?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, the thing is there's movies, and Alex can speak to this. There's the Batman movies. It all depends on the actor. It all depends. Yep. Like, I buy Michael Keaton. I don't buy Christian Bale. Only because I'm thinking, they made it too real. I don't buy it. They'd have found out he's Bruce Wayne. They'd have sued his ass into poverty. It just wouldn't it wouldn't happen. Whereas Michael Keaton, I totally buy it. This is one of those movies that could be like, oh, this is stupid. I don't buy it at all. You know, but I do. I buy it. Alex, you buy it?
Do I buy it? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I there's that, I think it's that teenage boy inside of me that's willing to believe anything. But I think this is one that doesn't really push the boundaries of suspension of disbelief. It you know, James Cameron, again, I think just his eye for detail. When we're introduced to the Omega
sector,
yeah, it's believable. It's like, you know, these guys have it all. I mean, they've got everything covered. You know, they've got all the technology, all the best of everything that they could make, you know, anybody look like some normal schmo. So it added to the belief that Arnold has been able to pull it off all these years. I mean, here he is married to this woman for how many years? How old is the daughter at this point?
She's 14. They've been married for 17 years.
17 years. Yes. Yeah, they can pull it off. He can pull it off. And
it is, I mean, it's pretty fantastical that you don't tell your wife that you're a spy.
Well, by the way, yeah. Which only adds to the fun, I think.
Yeah. Yes, but they were all bad.
They're all bad.
Great line. Great line.
Yeah. And I think what helps too is Arnold's performance. I mean, you know, it really is a fully realized performance for somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And I think he says to this day, it's his favorite, still his favorite.
Yeah. Well, it's his best for sure.
It's his best. And
I remember thinking it was like an Adam Sandler breakthrough, like Punch Drunk Love. Uh-huh. And then I went around, I rushed out to see Eraser the next year, two years later, and he was back to just wooden and plodding and just a big fat turkey. I'm like, nope, this is James Cameron's genius. It's not like Arnold suddenly learned to act. James Cameron directs him really well. Like it's a charming, like self, what's not the word? He's always apologetic. He's more like, he's not the typical Arnold Schwarzenegger. Oh, sorry. He's constantly apologizing for all that he's doing. Bert, did you notice that?
Yeah, it was, as far as acting skills, it has to be really, really bad for me to be able to notice. I'm not a connoisseur of that sort of a thing. I can enjoy poor performances as well as I can enjoy good performances. But, you know, that one was totally, like you were talking about, believable. Yeah, it could be. And every average schmo, you know, like me, wanted to be him, you know. Like, oh, I want to be just like that. But, of course, it was a little too fantastical. And, you know, it was like, you know, there are some, I don't know, what do you call them, CIA spies or whatever that are out there. Living their lives that their family may or may not know what they do. They disappear, and
the family has to deal with that. This is a little more like, oh, so he goes home every night with this elaborate scheme to keep his wife in the dark.
She calls into work, someone answers.
I think he's in a meeting.
But again, how often do you see an episode of 48 Hours or Dateline about... She thought she knew everything about her husband for 20 years, and then you find out, and like, wow. So it is possible to have that double life.
All right, I want to shift gears. This is in honor of Roseanne, who I guess obviously decided in the end not to join us. But let's address the elephant in the room. Is this movie sexist? George Young, you ought to know.
Why me?
All right, Bert. We'll get back to you, George. Bert, is this movie sexist?
No, I say no, but I'm a guy. So,
all right, Alan, Bert back or George back at you.
I'll tell you, Gino. I mean, maybe this is my old numbness to the stupidity of the last 40 years or so, but I gotta say no. It didn't even dawn on me. I mean, what would be all right? Let me ask you, what would be sexist about it?
He lies to her the entire time. I'm speaking for Roseanne because I spoke to her this morning about it.
There we go.
Jamie Lee Curtis is seen as either a dork, so she's not gray. She's either this uber uptight dork, badly dressed, bad hair, big thick glasses, or she's a sex pot. There's no middle ground. So there's that. And then of course Arnold completely lies and then has her do a striptease for him rather than just coming out and being an honest man. He's objectifying his wife and makes her you know, that's, but again, Roseanne, I know, but Roseanne is speaking for all the women who did it. Again, Middle Easterners, Muslims came out against this movie and women came out against this movie in 94. Even in 94, before it became like every third person was crying sexism. Right. Even in 94, there was some, I remember Jamie Lee Curtis saying, guys, it's a joke. I remember an interview and she was like, come on, it was a comedy, shut up. So she was saying that back then. I don't know if she would still say that now.
Well,
I
think,
no.
Yeah.
I think she came out and said that was her most badass moment that she's so proud of.
Even still.
You know, she's never turned back and said, oh, you know, no, she's, I think, most proud of that moment. I mean,
let me just address another issue.
Yes.
Her body is amazing.
Yes.
And that scene is really well shot. Like, okay, I got to admit that she looks incredible in that scene, you know?
Yeah. No, she, she worked for that. Yeah. It paid off.
Yeah, and well, James Cameron never shoots a bad film. I mean, it's just that scene works visually, you know, with Arnold's in the shadow and her in the foreground. It's just a well shot scene. It adds to it. So I don't, you know, I'm of the opinion that, yeah, why are you taking it so seriously? She's had this scene where she's screaming for adventure, and then he, you know, it's, I would bet you saw the original film. George, did you see the original French film?
The original French film?
Yeah.
True Lies? No.
Okay. What's it called, Alex? You've seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. La Totale.
Oh.
Yeah, it's hard to find.
I would imagine that's straight from France, that scene.
You can go to YouTube and just see a trailer for it, or you can see, if you're lucky enough to find some scenes.
But you know what? I've sat through a lot of French films, especially when I work for the Jewish Film Festival. Like every fourth film is from France, and that's the joke. It's like every time it's from France, you'll get people clapping, and you'll have incest and you know all these crazy relationships and totally objectifying women in a shit ton of movies. Sorry, Bert, but you'll have all these movies where it's like, okay, that's pretty sexist, and people are clapping and love it because it's from France, right? So I can guarantee that something like that similar happens in the French movie and nobody was crying foul, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, yeah.
But isn't that a hallmark of most James Cameron movies? You do have strong female characters.
Yeah, but I mean, think in this case, she's sort of object... I mean, in the
in a sense,
feminist argument, the husband isn't... he's not being straight with her. He's not being honest.
But you know, she sort of gets her her revenge. You know, the big reveal. What can I say? I'm a spy. Just hauls off and clocks him.
Well, she also, again, look at how the care, and especially it sticks out now. Like, you know, they had to add that where he touches her face with the rose, and then she just beats the crap out of him. Yeah. She hits him with the phone.
So she's got she's got moxie. That's, yeah. You know, that's for sure. She's not.
It almost feels like, well, would she go that far? Or would she just run out of the room? I mean, it almost feels too much to me, given how jittery she is for most of the movie. You know,
You know, we've all been numbed by the 100-pound underwear models that now beat the crap out of former NFL linebackers. That's what, you know, that's part of the box checking that not only did I find when I was doing, you know, film production, but now when I, you know, writing novels. And, you know, for Jamie Lee Curtis, to, you know, Arnold would have wrung her neck if that was a real relationship. There's no way it goes that far. But, you know, again, kudos to Cameron. I think he tapped into something there.
Yeah, and again, and as Jamie Lee Curtis says, it's a comedy. It's supposed to be funny. Mm-hmm. Is it extreme? Sure, but it's comedy. This is what really stinks that we have to defend this. So let's get into another key surprise is the cast. It's a very eclectic cast that really works.
Yeah, I agree.
Bert, any thoughts? Who's your favorite supporting cast member?
Well, let me look at the list.
While you're thinking, Alex.
Well, I mean, not now, but back then, I thought Tom Arnold was hilarious.
He is. Absolutely. Nobody thought Tom. I remember me going, Tom Arnold? Yeah. What the hell?
No, he was a revelation in this movie. I mean,
great chemistry with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Really funny lines. I mean, you can just go down the list of funny lines. The funniest is. To me, is she's banging a goddamn used car salesman. It just gets better and better. And then you'd be laughing too if it was happening to some other guy.
Oh yeah,
it's so funny.
It worked. It really worked.
Yeah, yeah. just so many lines that he has. Oh, I remember when I jumped out of a can or I got shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. Well, I saw the clip again and it reminded me of it. And I remember laughing at it pretty hard. Was when he's there, you know, there's a big shootout in the street and he hides behind the street light right. And his belly sticking out, his butt sticking out or whatever. But
he checks to make sure everything's there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
And then blesses the lamppost.
Yeah.
A great touch.
Yeah. Bert, or George, any standout supporting characters besides Mr. Arnold?
Tia Carrera, who, you know, was flavor of the month for a couple of years, thought was good as Juno Skinner.
Yeah, you're right.
Found her performance to be, you know, pretty multi-layered.
Yeah.
The fact that she's in league with those guys.
Yeah.
And I think she played that well.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree about Tia Carrera. Again, adding to the eclectic cast, I think I saw her in Rising Sun. I think she was in Rising Sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't think much of her. And I remember just thinking, what a weird cast on the reading the poster going, this is a weird cast. And they all really deliver. And Alex, I'll give you the top spot to discuss our friend Mr. Paxton. Bill Paxton, hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want me to add to that?
No, no. I mean, but surprising. Like he comes in and it's a surprising part for him.
It's a surprising part. And it's, you know, and it's, and that's one of those parts that can become a real distraction in a lesser actor's hands, I think, because it never strays from the movie. I mean, it really does add to the story, and I think a lot of it is because of his performance.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, and again, he's not, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity to do, to really play up to the camera in a role like that. Like I said,
well, it's broad. Let's not lie to ourselves. It's a broad performance
character,
but it's still like his skill where he makes it work for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. he does. So, you know, and especially when you know over the years what he is capable of doing, what he was capable of doing.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, a lot of it is a credit to James Cameron because they work so well together. I didn't realize how far back those two went.
Yeah.
When James Cameron was coming up just working on anything like Roger Corman low-budget movies, and there was Bill Paxton. So even before Terminator, they had a relationship. So and maybe you just get that sense of trust and
well, you know,
he was the right man for the job.
For sure. And his lines are hilarious. And they even are. Still, I was laughing. I mean, I know that's coming, and I always laugh when he goes, "Oh, it's some dumb jerk, huh?" You know, I can't say all the lines because of Bert, but they're all super funny. And they're grotesque. They're grotesque, but they're so hilariously over the top.
But when the Corvette scene?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Corvette scene.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And again, one of my favorite moments, it's so, I mean, it happens so fast, is when, you know, they breach his trailer and they're dragging him out to the car. And you can hear him, take her. It's so brilliant, though. It's so, because it's so fitting to the character.
You know what? During that scene, I love the fact it's James Cameron who said, "Oh yeah, he's got her head in her lap."
Woo-ha!
That's James. James Cameron does the voiceover for both that guy and the pilots.
Harriers. Okay.
And let's talk about that Harrier scene. I think in '94, I'd never seen the like.
You've never seen a Hawker Harrier?
Well, I knew what they were, but I'd never seen a movie with such an elaborate finale. You know, and I remember when Forrest Gump won Academy Awards, I'm like, are you kidding me for the blue socks and the duplication versus that Harrier? Harrier was incredible.
It was.
You know?
And I heard it was a full mock-up.
Yeah.
For a lot of the close-up scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously the Navy was involved in the scenes in the Keys.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
At a cost of like $100,000 back in those days or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
George, you ever produced anything with a jet on it?
With a jet?
Yeah.
I did a decent amount of aerial stuff, but I don't think anything that powerful. No, I don't remember doing it.
I mean, how do you think just supposing knowing your knowledge of production manager, what kind of hoops did they have to jump through to get that? You know, on a city street, no less.
Well, yeah, right. You know, I probably would look at the scene again and just try and figure out, is anything in there composited?
There's literally, I mean, that's the mock-up, but they have the scene, the actual jet land on the city street.
Yeah,
they're in a Florida town, obviously not a huge, it's not Miami or anything, it's just but you're still landing a jet on the street.
Yeah.
You know?
What would they have to, you know, the closest thing I can think of is when I had to put the helicopter down in the middle of, oddly enough, it was for Tony Scott. And I had to put a helicopter down on Highway 1. And if I could compare it to that, I think I had every jurisdiction on the planet that had to sign off on it. Obviously, you start with, you know, CHP in California. There had to be an equivalent in Florida.
Yeah.
And you probably would have to go – I'm going to speculate here. Something like that, you would probably have to go all the way to the governor's office.
Yeah.
That's my guess. I think everybody there in law enforcement and in, let's just call it traffic control and community safety, they're going to kick that upstairs all the way to the governor's mansion.
All right. Well, going into the technical aspects, again, are we talking about visual effects? Any thoughts on Brad Fidel's score? Bert, you now known as music? Nope.
Well, I did hear a review of it saying it was, they said it was good. But I didn't watch it recently, so I was going to watch it and listen to that, but I couldn't really get an update to know. I did write his name down.
Yeah.
The Brad Fidel.
Yeah.
And
he,
I'm like,
did the Terminator.
Okay. They said it was kind of a lot matched. Some things match Terminator.
Yeah, it sounds like the Terminator, but I think it's a really great score. It's not orchestrated by him. It's orchestrated by Shirley Walker. So she did the Batman score. She was a big orchestrator. She occasionally wrote her own stuff, but she died. She was a really good orchestrator, and I think she like the Terminator or the True Lies theme sounds a little bit like the Terminator, but it also reminds me of On the Waterfront, and it's a really cool. I like it. I think the music works really well. Anyway, but nobody cares about this except me.
But yeah, you do seem to take that to heart. I almost look at it as sort of like background. Like if it wasn't good, you might notice it. I don't know. That's an easy way out. I will say, I thought, you know, like my cousin was Alan Splett, who did all the sound design and sound editing for David Lynch all those years. So, maybe I tune into that more. I thought that, you know, whatever was added that wasn't strictly musical to True Lies was really pretty exceptional.
Oh, yeah. Yes. You know, sound design for sure.
It was just amazing. And sometimes it can get to be overwhelming. Right. And I can't say that about the movie True Lies.
No, I think James Cameron, I think he learned his lesson on Aliens, how effective good sound design is. I've seen him talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
So I think after that, all his movies just sound, you know, they just have a really great, you know, Titanic, all of them, Avatar, they all have a really good, solid scope. And I mean, my passion is music, but you always notice like just the sound of the Harrier and all of that, the machine gun fire. I mean, I think what I love more about True Lies and Die Hard is just the catharsis when he unleashes on those terrorists with the Harrier. I mean, it's just, it's so big and it's so like, you know, kill them all. You know, there's just such a, like, it is a little video game-ish, I will admit, but it's just so, it's not like now where it just reeks of artifice. You know, every CGC now, I'm just not that interested. It looks fake. There's a tactile reality to True Lies that's still there because they're using a model jet to film those scenes. And I just think that it's just great stuff. I mean, it's still like watching it yesterday. I just thought, yeah, no, I'm back in love with this film. I mean, I was out of love with it just because it was a sore spot. I mean, after watching that. And then the next day I'm looking at the same kind of thing on TV. It kept me away from that film for a long time. I think people need to forgive it for its subject matter and just get it back out there. Because I know they were doing a TV show, but who cares, you know?
Supposedly on Disney Plus, there's going to be one.
It's like, you know, it's like Mad Max without Mel Gibson. I don't want to watch True Lies without Arnold, you know, or Jamie Lee Curtis for that matter.
Yeah.
All right, George, have we talked you into it? Or are you still going to hold on to Die Hard over True Lies?
Well, I'll tell you what, in fairness, when it does present itself again, because I looked for it as well and could not, except for the clips, you know, sooner or later, it's going to show up again. And just for you, Gino, because you've now had me on, I think, three times.
Yes.
I'm going to give True Lies another tumble.
Yeah. I remember just being blown away. I saw it opening day at the Coronet.
Oh.
You know, Long Live the Coronet in San Francisco. Okay. Packed house, front row, because I barely got in. and I just loved it. It was, to me, like one of the best big screen, like sitting in the movie theater just watching a great Hollywood home run. And I still view it that way. Yeah, Bert, you didn't see it either. Yeah, again, it's hard to find. It came and went on Netflix or on Prime, I think.
It was on Prime.
Yeah.
I even did a Prime chat with support. They're like, it must have been pulled.
Didn't know. They're scared of the movie. They're scared of it at this point.
Strange.
You know? Yeah. Alex, we didn't know what you think, but you will watch this film again.
You have a
DVD of it?
I have a DVD, yeah. I watch it on my portable DVD player, and it looks just fantastic. I've never played it on the big screen.
There's no menu, but there's the special features are trailer. You know, they just slapped that thing on and tried to pretend nobody would notice.
It's a really
poorly produced DVD.
Oh,
you know,
that's too bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thank you, George. Thank you, Bert. Thank you, Alex, for joining me. Especially
welcome.
One of my rare love fests, because usually I'm critical, but I love this film.
You nerd.
Thank you for listening to Fabulous Film and Friends. Copyright 2022, a Bel Air Films production.